welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
Dawn Keatley.
And on today's episode, we are deep diving into Us, Jordan Peele's much-anticipated follow-up to 2017's Get Out. Amassing over $70 million nationwide in its opening weekend, Us is a roller coaster of doppelgangers, pop culture nods, and complicated imagery. Think pieces dissecting the film abound, and Peele has certainly gotten everyone talking. But is that the same thing as Us being a good horror movie? We're a divided crew on this episode, so stay tuned.
Let's break down the plot, first of all, for the two people out there that haven't seen the film yet. And yes, there will be spoilers in this episode. Three parts to the film. In the first part, Adelaide, as a young girl, goes to the boardwalk in Santa Cruz, goes into a house of mirrors, and sees her double. Then we cut to the big second part of the film, the middle, where Adelaide and her husband, Gabe, and two children, Zora and Jason, go to stay at a house by the beach in Santa Cruz. Before too long, the family is threatened by their identical doubles, very creepy, whom we learn are called the Tethered. And in the long middle, again, the family fights off their own doppelgangers and those of their friends, Josh and Kitty and their twin daughters. In the final third of the film, kind of a confrontation between Adelaide and her double, who's called Red. And here, as well as fighting, they do a lot of talking. And we kind of learn who the Tethered are. And we see their uprising come to fruition. I think we're going to start right by getting out there our general view of the film, because I think we have some differing opinions here.
I feel like everybody in the room is looking at me.
We are.
So what do we think about this film?
So I went and saw the film with Liz. And I'm just going to put it out there. I didn't love it. So I struggled with it because I just was left with so many questions, but not meaningful questions. I was confused by some of the aesthetic choices. I don't think I ever felt scared, nervous. I didn't get that feeling that I look for in a horror film. So it's not to say that it's not a horror film. It is wholeheartedly a horror film, but I just didn't get the feeling that I look for out of a horror film. So I really struggled with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I might have felt most diametrically opposed to that in that I actually really did love it. And I guess I have to say by the time I went to see it, which granted was on the opening day, mm-hmm. but still I'd read so much about it, I was a little skeptical. I just thought, okay, can it really be this good? I saw some poster where somebody said it's the best horror film ever.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough call.
Well, that I think we can agree
probably
on.
Not.
Yeah, not ever.
Probably not. But I really did like it. I mean, honestly, I wasn't bored for a second. I was just pretty much compelled by the plot the entire time. I think one of the reasons I liked it, sort of at a visceral level, I didn't know what was coming next at any given moment. And I think that was part of what, and this wasn't just about the twist at the end. This was kind of all the way through. I was like, what is this film and where is it going? And I did find it just pretty uncanny and creepy. And, you know, it references a lot of horror films, and I mm-hmm. love horror films that are sort of immersed in the tradition.
Yeah, so I'm probably somewhere in the middle between you two guys. I'll start with the positives. So Jordan Peele knows how to make a film. There's just no doubt in my mind after seeing this movie. I feel like he uses every frame and tells like these mini stories in addition to the narrative so that if you're looking at the screen, there's always something to occupy your eye. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think he's an important part of horror. And I definitely think his perspective is needed in horror. So that's good. Mm-hmm. I really love Lupita in this. I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah.
For the most part, I thought all of the performances were really good. Yeah. We can talk about the exceptions to that later because there are a couple. But a lot of people that I've read online talk about plot holes, and I honestly don't need sort of a linear story to enjoy it. So that wasn't so much my issue. What I do need is to appreciate something more on a visceral level, and I feel like this all was cerebral. Hmm. And I question how good a movie really is if you need to read like 20 think pieces in order to really get something out of it. And I had a lot of reactions that mimicked what I read in those think pieces, but it was all in my head. It was no sort of emotional reaction. So when the credits were rolling, I was like, huh, that's interesting. I know I'll think about it, but it's not something I would necessarily want to see again.
That's weird because it really did get me on a visceral level while I was there. And then afterwards, I did think there was a lot to think about. For me, that was both. In fact, I may even have had more problems in the cerebral part thinking about it afterwards. You know, I've sort of been like, okay, there's lots of interesting things to think about, but is there any coherent message coming from all that thought? I mean, what does it mean?
There's so many messages that I think it's
too
really,
many messages.
Too many. Absolutely too many. I mean, that is one benefit to the film is that it does keep you thinking about it. I'm still thinking about it.
It does create a conversation.
I go to horror films because I want to feel something. I want to be afraid or I want to laugh at like the ridiculousness. Yeah. And it was visually stunning, especially the dance sequence. I thought it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
But I've also seen that in other films that did give me that emotional reaction in addition. So something like Suspiria, that landed for me a lot better than this one did.
I mean, it's that big middle, which I think in some ways is the classic horror part of the film, when the family is being threatened by the doubles. I mean, it is straight out of The Strangers and Funny Games, and you can see parts of both of those films in it. And both of those films were actually way more terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, The Strangers in particular. And I thought Jason's mask is a lot like the mask that one of the strangers wears in that film. But they don't talk, right? I think none of the invaders say anything in The Strangers until maybe right at the very end of the film, if I'm remembering rightly. But, you know, like the doppelgangers get into Abe and Adelaide's living room and start talking. And that does kind of cut the horror, right?
Yeah.
Like you're just sitting there chatting away and explaining things. I guess that's the cerebral part you were talking about.
Yeah.
I like the way that you kind of phrased it when you were saying that, okay, I'm thinking about a lot, but I don't get that visceral feeling.
Yeah.
And it was very cerebral. So I kind of liken it to sometimes when you talk to an academic, like somebody that's really, really, really so smart that sometimes they don't know how to convey their message in a more populist way. So they write these really, really, really great pieces, or they have these really, really great thoughts, but it just sometimes doesn't get across to other people. And I felt like I was just talking to somebody that was really, really smart, a really fantastic filmmaker, but I didn't quite get it all. Like, I left there wondering, well, why do they have scissors? Okay, you know, tethered. Oh, well, why did they have those weird driving gloves? Why is there rabbits everywhere? Well, why was everybody grunting? Like, nothing really important.
But I like that Peele went all in and really tried to create something different, maybe.
In the tethered?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing we were going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I guess all the things you mentioned, Gwen, the gloves and the scissors, they're part of the tethered mythology. What do we think about the tethered as a horror monster? I mean, I read somewhere that Peele said he wanted to create a kind of new monster mythology, which makes me wonder, are the tethered going to be back? The scissors were really a false note for me in the film, maybe the only one. I thought they looked a bit goofy, you know, like carrying the scissors around.
I think in terms of horror monsters, the way they worked, for me at least, was very similar to like 1950s horror monsters. So like Creature of the Black Lagoon, Frankenstein, they pose this threat, but they're also inherently sympathetic because of the circumstances that they're sort of thrust into without their consent. So
that's true.
That's sort of where I see the monster lineage in the film.
And it goes right from there through George Romero's zombies, I think, when he started to present his zombies as slightly more sympathetic, like Day of the Dead with Bob and Land of the Dead in particular, you know, with the zombie uprising. Which, you know, and I think those track back to Frankenstein.
Absolutely.
Are they a super new monster, though?
The tethered?
Yeah. Like, is there anything, like, uniquely different you could even expound upon?
I mean, they're the same as what you said in the Romero zombies, but they're doppelgangers. I mean, I'm not sure I've seen that exactly
before. And I think one of you previously talked about like the repression angle and how usually the monsters are a signifier for repression. And I have like a different view on that. So I'm wondering if you guys saw it as repression, because if you do, then that kind of supports what you're saying, Gwen, in terms of it being something maybe we've already seen or at least used in the same way.
But doubling has been something that's been done since the dawn of time.
Like, since the dawn of time.
Yeah. Maybe not quite that far back.
I mean, I think we just gave it a different name. I mean, every horror scholar kind of talks about the doubling, whether it's in mirrors or, you know, other forms of self, or, you know, zombies or pod people or.
Yeah.
So I guess I just saw it as another form of doubling. I mean, I think even Noel Carroll in his book specifically uses the word doppelganger.
Yeah.
When he's talking about his art horror.
Yeah. I mean, there have been lots of sort of twins and doppelganger, and twins are obviously in this film too, sort of. Signaling the double. But I haven't exactly seen a film before where the sort of entire mythical landscape is every human has a clone, a double, who is going to try to kill them for their soul. I mean, it's a slightly different take on the double.
Yeah, and I think it's not so much about repression as it is knowingly creating a facade. So if you think about Gabe and when he picks up the bat and he's trying to sort of enact this like crazy hyper masculinity, we know it's a facade, but there's an awful lot that has to do with code switching, I think, that may be unique in this film. You have adult Adelaide, who isn't so much repressing her past as much as she is choosing to develop a new persona. And to me, that was a difference in the film. So rather than it being a double because you're trying to repress something and it's the double happens to you, which I do think we've seen in other horror films, this seems like a specific decision.
What you're saying reminds me of, say, Black Swan, which this film, I mean, obviously the dance scene. I mean, that seems to be the thing Oz isn't, right? In that there's Natalie Portman is repressing something and it kind of bursts out in the Black Swan.
Right.
And in the visions she has leading up to it.
Right.
So you're saying with the tether, there's like a conscious choice?
Well, I think of it as code switching. So that you present one face to one group and another face to another, depending on your circumstances.
I hope this isn't a digression, but this gets to a question that I only had the second time I saw the film, which is, does Adelaide know what she did when she was a child? I mean, does she remember growing up underground, growing up as one of the tethered, chaining the real Addie to the bed? Do you think, does she remember all of that? I really wasn't sure.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
I would think she would have to.
I mean, because your interpretation kind of makes it sound like you think she did.
I do.
And I guess, like, I think that the repression question just kind of came because I was reading some reviews. And I purposely avoided anything about the film before I went in the film. I didn't look at anything till afterwards because I wanted to have, you know, blank slate and give it a fresh chance. And I think somebody was talking about it possibly being about repression. But again, if you think about the tethered themselves, we're supposed to believe that they were created by man.
Yeah.
And they were created as these clones. So I guess that kind of throws the repression angle even out the window. If they were created by somebody else.
The government.
To be these, by the government. To be clones. Soulless
bodies.
But for what reason? Did we ever get that out?
We're never. I actually was listening to that.
Clones.
Yeah. Just creating. I mean, the little snippet of conversation just simply said they basically, I think it's a kind of case of, they wanted to do it to see if they could.
Yeah.
And so they were able to make a copy of the body, Red says, but not the soul.
Right.
And then they abandoned the project.
Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions in this for sure. But I don't see it as plot holes. Did you see it as a plot hole that you couldn't get past?
I can handle plot holes.
Right.
Like, it just felt like, I guess I gotta have a reason where these people came from.
I don't think this is about repression.
No.
Like, I don't think any of us do from the sounds of it. Though, just visually and in terms of the plot, you could read it that way. Just, I mean, Abraham and Gabe seem the most obvious examples just because Gabe is not stereotypically masculine and he seems very verbal. He's always talking. He talks way more than his wife does. And then, you know, Abe is like tall and totally silent, just sort of yells. I mean, he could be that sort of repressed rage, id kind of figure. But the whole mythology of where the tethered come from kind of disallow that, really.
I think, too, the way he operates with his wife. Like, I'm thinking of the scene in which she is the one who jumps into the car and is driving. And she's the one who's making the decisions.
Yeah.
He seems to acquiesce pretty easily to her demands yeah. or her decisions. So, and it almost reads to me like he has no problem with that, which is why when he suddenly yeah. does invoke this hyper-masculinity, it seems like such a strange...
Yeah. And it's the only time he does it is when he's confronting the family for the first time. Because I think Adelaide says to him twice some version of like, I'm in charge now. And he's just like, fine. He and just does what she says.
When I watch the film, and this just exposes my subjectivity and my kind of worldview. When I watched the film, I was just like, oh, wow, he's such a, you know, ineffective dad. You know, he's just such a goof. He's very National Lampoon-y. And it wasn't until I read some of the reviews that it actually made me think a little bit more. Because, again, this is my subjectivity. You don't know what you don't know until somebody kind of flashes it in front right. of your face. When somebody said that that could have even been a directorial choice to say to combat that whole hyper-masculine, aggressive black male stereotype too. And I was like, oh,
that makes sense okay. too, because that moment like, in the film uh-huh. is humor. Like you laugh at that because yeah. it seems so absurd. So that actually yeah. makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was one of the few times in the movie theater when people laughed when he did the thing with the baseball bat and the
see,
family.
That's interesting. Cause like when we went to see it, it was quiet.
Really?
That's because there was like four people in the theater.
No, there was,
on opening night.
There were
Beats of Dubs.
There were more than that. Enough that you would have heard like a little bit yeah. of a rumble. And there was like no reaction, which I thought was so strange because when I went to see Get Out, which admittedly was to a packed house, there were so many reactions.
Yeah.
There were like no reactions to this. And I thought that's
strange.
Interesting. Yeah.
Saving grace of the film for me where I had all of my reactions.
Oh geez.
Everywhere that Josh and Kitty were. Yo, when they went into Josh and Kitty's house and their tethered started to show up, Beach Boys blasting,
yeah.
I was in my glory because I got a little bit of that horror comedy kind of thing. I had the gore everywhere. Yeah. People are slashing each other. Kids are cartwheeling. And wouldn't it just be
I
nice?
I see how you'd like
it was
that.
Fantastic. Like, I just wanted to jump up in that unpacked theater and be like, yeah, that's a horror film.
Next to the ballet, my favorite moment was when they are trying to tell Siri to call the police and it yeah. starts playing yes. the police.
Yes.
Was so perfect.
That was fantastic. That was well
words.
Played. That was very well played.
So, okay, well, we've covered the tethered, right? Mm-hmm. And we should get into the politics part of it. Does the film make a convincing argument for any political side? Any political vision here?
I mean, we do get the one moment where Red says, we are Americans.
We are Americans. Yeah.
But I felt like it was less about political moments and more about cultural moments that occasionally get politicized. And the most obvious to that is the Hands Across America
yeah.
motif that just keeps popping up. But I'd be hard-pressed to say whether or not it was a conservative or a liberal film. I mean,
I agree.
It's Peele, so I feel like if Get Out's any sort of indicator,
yeah, it's probably not conservative.
More... Right.
At least intentionally, it could be unintentionally.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But like when I left Get Out, I knew exactly what the political stance mm-hmm. was, whereas I left this one and I had no clue.
Yeah, I mean, and the final shot is of the chain of tethered dressed in their red coveralls holding hands across America. I mean, in part, I wonder if it isn't kind of just accidental. I mean, you know, Red, who masterminds it all, she was just a little girl when she kind of vanished from the human world. And mm-hmm. I guess we see her seeing the Hands Across America promo right at the beginning mm-hmm. of the film.
And that was a big deal at that time period.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember it.
Yeah, me too.
And everything, like, you know, when I've read stuff about the film and the Hands Across America thing, everyone's always like, Hands Across America was a total ridiculous failure. You know, it was just, you know, a Band-Aid, didn't fix any of the real problems that were going on in the mid-80s. But, you know, Adelaide's just a little girl. She sees it. She's impressionable. And this makes her kind of endearing, actually. Mm-hmm, you know,
yeah.
She takes that and she, like, creates her vision of collective action and resistance.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think this is where building sympathy for the tethered becomes really vital. So it read to me like less of a rebellion moment and more of an uprising, because who in their right mind would be in the same situation as the Tethered and not want to fight back? Yeah. And so when they actually join hands and sort of reenact that Hands Across America, Gwen and I saw it together and we both had the same reaction. We're like, oh, they're literally building a wall. Yeah. And in this political climate, that suggests
wearing
something.
Red. Yeah.
Wearing red, exactly. And so I think it's an interesting visual he's playing with in terms of drawing from what's happening politically.
Yeah. So you guys see, you read red as Republican then?
Well, I think,
because I was saying for me, red is and always will be communist when it comes to politics. Oh, yeah.
For me, I was just looking for some kind of symbols in there. I was looking for some kind of a meaning, I guess. Maybe that just where my brain was going at the time period. But I think, too, even now, like after reading so many direct quotes from Jordan Peele, those make a lot more sense to me, too. Just really about sometimes confronting ourselves, we're our own worst enemy. That, I think, made a lot more sense to me.
I guess the way I read it was sort of reframing the wall language. Hmm. So we know what we're getting politically, which is definitely Republican, red, mm-hmm. keep them out. Whereas I felt like the way it was used in this film is that here were the people who are literally rising up from their circumstances through unity.
Yeah.
And so they're building a wall. But
it's a very different kind of
wall. Very different kind of wall.
Yeah.
And I think...
And it's a human wall about people tethered together. So we seem to be talking toward go tethered.
Go tethered. Oh, I'm team tethered completely.
Tethered twins.
Listen, when those twins got it, that made me so happy because I love a shining shout out.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to die. And I especially wanted to die.
I wanted the movie to be about them.
They were so awful on the beach.
Yeah, they were.
They were. I hated their guts. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I was happy to see them die and in such a bloody way. So that was enjoyable.
I don't know if I'm team anybody.
Because our main family is, you know, not tethered. Except Adelaide is, kind of. Except she's one of the tethered who switched sides and decided to oppress her own people, as it were.
So what does that say about people that gain a certain agency?
Yeah, you're right.
You're going to kick people down?
Yep, power begets power.
Once you move up.
Yep, one of the oppressed, Adelaide, mm-hmm. moves above ground, and the only thing she can think about is like walling off, and this is where the wall does come in, walling off the threat, which is the rest of the tethered.
So soul or no soul, you're going to keep people down.
I mean, that was one of my questions, which I think is maybe the most important question of the film for me. It's like, does it matter if you have a soul or not?
It doesn't appear to.
It doesn't appear to matter, does it?
Because I also saw somebody ask a question later on, too, about what's the little boy's name?
Jason.
Did he switch?
Mm. That was that's been a big thing.
When he goes into the locker.
That's been a big thing on Reddit. That Jason is actually also one of the tethered.
Oh, so that Pluto took his spot?
Yeah.
Oh. You've just
I mean, I know that
world.
there's a lot of physical differences between the two, but I mean, I just know that that was one of the bigger questions, too. So
that's interesting.
Well, just think about it. I mean, Pluto is not trying to kill Jason. I mean, from what we see, the tethered come up and they immediately try to kill their double. For some reason, Pluto isn't trying to kill Jason.
And isn't Pluto, in Greek mythology, like the king of the underworld?
Underworld, yeah. Can I tell you my biggest disappointment of the film is I never got to see Jason's magic trick.
Well, that's another piece of evidence that he's actually tethered. That's why he doesn't know the magic trick.
Oh.
Because he's actually one of the tethered come up and he's taken Jason's spot. So he doesn't know the magic trick.
That would bode for me.
There was a whole article about all these Reddit theories.
Really have to get on Reddit.
And then there was the fact that he seems a little clueless.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's a kid, but, you know, when they're singing that song, I Got Five on it, he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't have any rhythm. It's like his mom is coaching him in all these ways. She seems way more attached to him than to her daughter. Like,
she's
always protecting him. I don't know when it would have happened, though. It really bangs home, I think, Jordan Peele's main point. I think he's even said this. You know, the whole, the monster is you. You can't tell the difference between them and us. It just blurs that line all the more. I mean, it's blurred with Adelaide. And if you think Jason might actually be one of the tethered two, it blurs it even more.
It troubles binaries, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just us, them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't always identify
who's us and who's them.
Who's the bad guy by, you know, how they vote or what they drive or, you know, those things. So I do like that about it.
Which seems to, I mean, to get back to the political thing we sort of were talking about right here. I mean, you know, with Get Out, Peele talked all about like Obama, post-racialism, giving the lie to that. It's about the lie of liberal post-racialism. And he even tied it to Trump a little bit. This doesn't seem that directly, so directly connected to politics. In a sense, it's more like an intervention saying, like, look, this is a divided world. This is the kind of bloodshed that happens when you do segregate us from them. So make it a human chain rather than a wall.
I'm curious, though, what do you think would happen with the tethered that make the Hands Across America?
Yeah. What are they going to do now?
What do you think would be the outcome of them once they let go of Hands? Do you think they're just going to continue their carnage? Or do you think that they would...
No, because I think now that they've gotten rid of their doppelgangers, they can step into the world that they wanted to. So they'll suddenly be exposed to things like, hey, I can eat things that are other than live rabbits, and I can sleep in beds, and I can have a life that I saw repeatedly mimicked down to me that I could never
attain. So materialism gives you happiness?
I think what's going to happen is that they're going to experience the materialism and the comfort and the safety and the security, and then they're going to become exactly what
they displaced.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would.
See, I wouldn't have thought that.
You think they'll stay more, I don't want to use the word altruistic, but a little bit pure in their motivations?
No, not at all. I think they're going to keep fucking things up.
But there'll be nothing left.
Pardon my French. That just comes out sometimes.
There won't be anything else to sort of mess with, though, because if they've already taken away sort of the objects of their oppression, at least in their own mind, then...
But what's changed in their circumstances outside of living under the ground or above the ground? I mean, some of the object of their hate is gone. But once they realize that their life is still the same, they still don't have a soul. They still don't really have any purpose. They're still probably going to walk around and bash their heads into walls as they, you know, spin around. I don't know. Like,
but not if we use
they don't have
Adelaide
language
as the
they don't have
template. So if we follow.
But she had people to learn that stuff from.
And she was
she came
child.
Into a family and she had to learn it. So if you remember when she came out of that funhouse, she was essentially mute and they thought it was her trauma.
Right. Yeah.
She had to learn to mimic emotion. She had to learn to mimic things. They'll have nobody to mimic except for possibly Adelaide.
They'll have television and movies.
Who's going to be sitting there playing that? Who's going to be working, you know, the radio stations? Who's going to be working the television stations?
I guarantee you that people were killed. Well, the one guy was killed listening to music. So music would be present in some places. And I think it just takes a few people or a few of the tethered having exposure to maybe some music, some television, some film in order to create mimicry. And then the other tethered would learn from them.
I see it as an empty promise of happiness. Like, I'm going to get up here and I got Best Buy now, but I just...
like, I've got Best Buy.
I don't know. I may be more with Gwen on this one, because when you see the great boardwalk scene near the end where you see above in the carnival and then you see that the tethered are kind of mimicking the same actions down below, like whack-a-mole and eating... And, you know, like, in both cases, it's kind of pointless and ridiculous. I mean, and then when Kitty's doppelganger, Elizabeth Moss, you know, she gets to sit in front of the mirror and scrape scissors down her face and put lipstick on. I mean, none of those things suggest that when the tethered come up and start doing what the above ground people did, that it's going to be anything but just... vacuous and empty, and
it feels like a lose-lose. So even if they would mimic the people that they became untethered from,
which they do, I think,
you know, a really fruitful life if you're just mimicking other people.
But isn't all life just mimicking other people?
I like to think not. I hope see that. Not. But then I guess
we have very different worldviews.
Yeah, this is where I disagree with you.
I just kind of see it as if zombies took over. So, because again, this is kind of like a zombie film.
They are
to
like
me.
Zombies. Sure. Yeah.
If zombies eat everybody's brains and they continue to go on living, it's probably just going to be a kind of chaotic place.
I still think, though, that the tethered are driven by this desire to experience quote-unquote happiness that they've seen reflected in their doppelgangers, and that's sort of the driving force. At least that's what I got out of everything that Red was saying.
Do they know? I mean, Red knows. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, You got warm, tasty food. I got raw, bloody rabbit.
Right.
You got soft toys. I got things that sliced my hands. The question is whether every tethered has that knowledge.
True.
Because
that is
she's actually human.
Yeah,
and
that's
she
true.
Is, that is very true. But she's the one sort of leading the...
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it just kind of comes down to, too, sometimes we like to direct our hate at things that we think would make us happy. But at the end of the day, it doesn't. Like, a lot of that has to come from within. So, like, they're sitting there saying, you know, I'm pissed because you had a stuffed animal. I'm mad because you had, you know, you got to do this. I'm mad because you got to do that. But then it's really easy to target our rage at things that are what we thought we wanted or what other people have and we think we don't. But it's bigger than that.
I mean, the only thing that makes me think that maybe the tethered might evolve is that presumably now they've killed their doubles, they have a soul. Mm. So if you think that means anything, then presumably they are going to strive for a better life. But I guess I think one of the paradoxes of this film for me is that I think the film shows that, we said this earlier, having a soul doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
I agree.
So,
especially if we all kind of went team tether.
Yeah.
But within the context of the movie, given these religious underpinnings,
yeah, there's a lot of religious
stuff. Peele might argue that having a soul makes a difference.
Well, if he thinks that, he should have showed it in the film. I didn't see that having a soul made a difference.
I didn't either.
Because that would lead me to the rabbits. And
rabbits.
I'm curious what you guys thought about the rabbits. You didn't care for the rabbits?
No, it made no point to me.
Oh,
like, I understand, you know, a lot of times scientists use rabbits as their...
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Their test dummies. I also read somewhere that Jordan Peele hates rabbits.
Yeah, I read that, too.
He thinks that if they were human, they would be sociopaths.
Yeah. He's like, just look in a rabbit's eye.
But then, interestingly enough, if he thinks that rabbits would be sociopaths if they were human, what does that say about the tethered?
Yeah.
If they're like the rabbits.
If they're like the rabbits.
And he genuinely thinks that they would be sociopaths.
That's a good point. Because he does seem to align the rabbits with the tethered.
I mean, for me, when I saw the rabbits, after I thought about it for a while and thought about the other sort of religious imagery, we get the repeated Jeremiah 11:11.
Yeah.
And it made me think about Leviticus 11, and it's Deuteronomy 14.
Really?
Yeah.
My mind didn't go that way.
That both specifically reference rabbits and then being unclean because they eat their own cud, I believe it is. I can't remember.
They eat their own what?
They basically eat their own poop.
Oh.
So that makes them, you know, unclean according to the Bible, and that humans should refrain from eating rabbits.
Okay.
And so within that context, it made me start to think that we know that tethered survive by eating the rabbits, and we also know that the biblical framework would support or would position the tethered as unclean. But I think that gets complicated by Abraham, Gabe's doppelganger, because in the Bible, Abraham is the father of nations. And if I'm remembering the Bible correctly, which I might not, but I did go through 4 years of seminary training, so I
which is why you can
this.
Just like remember passages
from
Deuteronomy.
I was in high school though, so I don't know if I'm really remembering this, but I think Abraham, after four generations of suffering, was told by God in an oath, now you're going to get the promised land. And so I'm not quite sure what to make of it, but it seems like there's something there.
Especially since Abraham is killed.
Right.
What does that mean?
But then his lineage, at least for four generations, according to the Bible, would suffer. But ultimately, they would get to the promised land.
Oh, so you're not being literal.
No,
like his
no.
children, just sort of. Oh, okay. So just other tethered in four generations might get to the promised land.
Right. So Abraham's been killed, but ultimately the tethered might be getting to the promised land by sort of rising up. That's my TED talk.
So going back to Jeremiah 11:11.
Yes.
Do you think that was a useful thing? Or
there's the doom thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, 11:11 is, therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape. And though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them. I mean, that's like the apocalypse is coming. And it does.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting because it comes to Adelaide. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the tethered, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and you can tell how uneasy she's getting with all of these 11:11. But obviously, it also comes to humans. So they've all been evil.
But it's interesting that it shows up in the tethered and the untethered, that, you know, homeless guy that's, you know, holding up the sign. Because he's first, you know, he's holding up the sign as the above ground kind of person. Yeah. And then he's got it carved in his face underneath.
And he's killed the day before. Yes. Like his double. I didn't even realize that till the second time I watched it.
So who's going to be cleansed is kind of the question.
Right. It's a working theory.
So the rabbits. So you think the rabbits are there to suggest. I mean, you're kind of saying two different things, though. You're saying their rabbits are unclean, therefore, and the tethered are unclean, but that Abraham's progeny might kind of inherit the earth kind of thing and end up at the promised land. So there's like, they're unclean, but they're also the future.
Oh, yeah. I have no sort of coherent thought on this. I just know.
Well, it's not you. I know the film.
No, I really don't. I just was struck by the religious imagery and the fact that, and I didn't pick up on this. I read this in a piece, and I think it might have been the Vulture one, but I'm not sure, that said when you first are getting the panning shot at the introduction of the movie, that you're seeing 11 cages.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah,
I didn't pick up on that at all. But as soon as they mentioned Jeremiah 11:11 and then seeing all of the rabbits, that's when I started to think about other biblical verses. But again, I've not worked it out. I do think the presence of the rabbits coupled with Abraham and sort of coupled with the uprising situation that they have going on, it seems to me like it has something to do with the Bible, but I am not sure what yet.
And the promised land.
Yeah.
I also, this is a little shift away from religion, but with the opening shot of the rabbit cages, I mean, it just struck me that there was a sea of white rabbit and then the occasional brown or partially brown rabbit. And I know Peele has said that this film isn't about race, but I was like, oh, that shot seems to be. And in the sea of white rabbits, as the camera sort of pulled back, the brown rabbit remained in the center, and it was actually kind of getting out of the cage. Like, it stuck its nose out at one point.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
And that's kind of signaling, I think, Adelaide. You know, it signals, like, one of them got away. One of them escaped.
See, again, it just exposes my subjectivity. Because the only thing I will ever think of when I see a white rabbit is Alice in Wonderland.
Well, that
that's
works,
it.
Too.
Yeah,
though.
And you do have your kind of turning around of
down
universes.
A rabbit hole.
Yeah, for sure.
Going
on
there. Never thought of that.
And that's where my brain would go.
Yeah.
And that would make a little bit more sense to me. Just kind of this, how things get topsy-turvy. And, you know, sometimes you think something's better and it's not. And sometimes you think something's an adventure and it's not. And something.
Yeah.
But.
And that's interesting because you literally get the scene of Adelaide going down the escalator with her weapon that seemed to me like a complete parallel to what you get in Kill Bill when you see the bride walking down the stairs. It looked identical to me. Mm. And she has her sword. So I think there is definitely something to the descent that probably aligns with what you're saying.
But no, I guess that's the only kind of redeeming part of the rabbits I could find. And I was super excited when they were free. I was like, yeah, the rabbits are jumping around too. But again.
But who's feeding these rabbits? I guess they're there just to be eaten.
Yeah, that's a plot I'm okay with.
Someone's got to feed them. That bothered me.
Nobody was like, who's feeding the tethered? Because even
well,
if you see them.
The rabbits.
That's right. I was going to say, because you see them when they're doing the same thing as the people up in the carnival. They're pretending to feed each other, but there's no food
There's no food,
Who's preparing this? Who's cooking it? And if they're able to
rip apart... No one's cooking it. They're eating rabbits
raw. If they're able to rip apart rabbits and eat them, that means they're able to be untethered from their person up top every once in a while.
That also means that they realize that they're mimicking actions because otherwise they would never eat.
Yeah.
So there has to be some sort of self-awareness wherein they say, okay, I have to stop mimicking the action of eating and I have to actually
eat. And I have to go kill a rabbit.
Right.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, did either of you see the twist coming?
Yeah.
Oh, from a mile away.
Absolutely.
What? Really?
Are you kidding me?
What?
The whole entire time, like, I lean over to her. I was like, she's starting to grunt all the time when she's doing
she
things.
She did it
like,
twice. Mm-hmm. Once, really.
But I was like, it's coming.
When she kills the twin. I am such a bad viewer. I am so uncritical. I mean, when I got to that part, I was like, what?
You're just more trusting than we are. It's like, oh, it's going to be a twist.
I think I distinctly, as soon as it was like revealed, I was like,
Wow.
I pity whoever sits next to me in a horror film because I'm like that girl. Like, I'm talking at the screen. I'm like,
I never see anything coming in any film, which is, you know, like, it's good for me. Yay me.
That is good.
I'm surprised
I wish I
all
had that
the
again.
Time.
Yeah.
I think that's something I've been missing for decades is just like that
So, well, we definitely need to do a podcast on the next film that shocks you. Well, do we need to talk at all about the dance? I mean, I thought that was...
That was pure obvious. Film genius, at that least. Yeah. I'll word that out there.
Yeah, that was gorgeous.
Really, really fantastic.
Who starts dancing first?
Well, that was my question. Who's actually leading the dance? Because I was inclined to think it was Tethered Adelaide. Well, Underground Adelaide
who
at
started.
That point.
Yeah. I mean, that would fit with... Because she's the human, or they're all human, I guess. She's the actual kind of above ground human.
Oh, no, I was talking about the underground. See, this is where it gets complicated.
Wait, what?
The Adelaide who was underground. So original, the Adelaide who went and got shackled underneath. I thought she was the one.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Okay.
OG Adelaide.
Too many Adelaides.
I just don't understand. Like, even too, like, the dance seemed liberating when she was a little girl. And it actually seemed to kind of come back at the end when they were fighting one another, because the fight really did mimic some of the moves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess it was the start of it all for, you know, the Tethered Adelaide. I mean, she was doing something wholly original, and that's when she kind of, what does she say? She says something like, the miracle happened, or the Tethered saw I was different and would deliver them from misery. And that was when she was dancing. And they all sort of reach out to her. She kind of becomes a prophet at that point.
I'm only right now starting to wonder. But so the Adelaide that ends up coming out of the carnival funhouse at like 8, 9 years old and has to learn how to be human. So are we supposed to believe she's just miraculously untethered just because she's in a different physical environment? Because if that's the case, that if I'm untethered just from being in a different physical environment...
Without having killed
somebody.
The girl. Yeah.
Then we're saying that somebody is solely a victim of circumstance.
But how could she exist if the other Adelaide was above ground as well?
It doesn't seem like she couldn't.
Like if...
Because...
The only way she was able to exist above ground was by forcing the other Adelaide below ground, so they both couldn't be above ground.
But again, so it's really just saying that I'm tethered because I live underground, not because I'm with you. Because as soon as the one came above ground, she was no longer in the same circumstances as everybody down in the tunnels. It was like, hey, I moved up like the Jeffersons, and now I'm a human.
I see your point. Like when the tethered girl handcuffs the real Adelaide and comes up above ground simply by changing location. I mean, she hasn't killed the girl, so she hasn't taken her soul. Simply by going above ground, she effectively untethers herself.
She was no longer...
Yeah, she's not tied to what the girl below is doing. In fact, the girl below, the woman below, is tethered to what the woman above. That whole thing about you married your prince, Gabe, and I got stuck with his double.
So it almost sounds like if you're stuck in a certain physical environment, you're doomed.
You're doomed. You're tethered.
So what does that say about class and race?
You're tethered even if you're not, if you're underground. Yeah. The film does seem to be saying that.
That's a little problematic.
It is interesting that he had him watch so many home invasion films when that technically happens, but it doesn't feel like a home invasion film to me at all.
Yeah, all these reviews kept talking about it as a home invasion film, and I was like, no, it didn't really feel like a home invasion, though.
No,
well,
not
why not?
You think
because
of the home
it
as
is.
The body, but...
Well, it is a home invasion film.
Like, I guess
technically.
They eventually come in. But maybe not enough of the film was in the home for me, because it did kind of spill out. I never left there thinking, I better lock my doors tonight.
And I think, too, the fact that they were at a vacation home that Adelaide already had sort of issues with, there wasn't that same sort of safety that you normally find.
Because
in
a lot of
that
dread
films.
Started in that Hall of Mirrors kind
too.
Oh,
that's true. Yeah.
Right.
So I already knew, all right, well, there's some kind of origin out there.
I actually think you should be locking your doors because you do not want to meet your doppelganger.
No, I know. I'm such an
Which one
a-hole.
Is the tethered, though? I can't answer that question.
No, I bet you my tethered would be really, really nice. So, yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, two of me in one place is a bad idea.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that in itself would be revelations, if you want to get biblical. I like how neither of you disagrees either.
We're just looking away.
All the movie references are designed to encourage audience engagement.
I agree.
And it makes, obviously, the audience feel like it's in the know. But in terms of, like, the continuous references, I feel like instead of creating sort of original emotion, that he used a lot of those references to sort of use people's nostalgia for that.
Yeah.
To substitute for actual emotion for the film.
I'll give you that. I can't argue on that one.
Oh, you probably could.
No, I think you're right.
I think it's an interesting monster mythology that, you know, sort of does tap into the zombie tradition in particular, but brings it home. I mean, zombies have been used as doppelgangers, like in The Walking Dead, some degree in Romero's films. But here, you know, the zombie really is us. So, yeah. And I thought that breaking down of the difference between us and them was pretty amazing. And the lack of a soul, the soul not making any difference.
And you know what? I think now that you kind of talk about it as zombies again, it just reminds me maybe that's why I didn't like it too. Because I just don't...
Oh,
I don't.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
yeah, you don't like zombie
I hate zombies.
Films.
I just don't think that they're a very good movie monster. So I think that maybe that is part of it. Because hands down, it's a good film. Do I think it's a great horror film?
Right.
Not necessarily. It is still, like I said, it's still very much horror. I wouldn't put it anywhere near one of my top lists as far as a horror film. But again, I think it's just a personal preference. Like, I don't like that type of horror.
So that's our two cents. Let us know which one of us you agree with. And we're hoping to cover the updated Pet Sematary.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think next time, which we're all very excited about. If you don't already, follow us on all social media at Horror Homeroom. And until then, we will talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.